It is Thursday, the 30th of October, and this is episode 227 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. I'm Chris, joined as ever by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Chris.
Run that off like, you know, I trips off the tongue like I've done it a million times before.
We've only done it 223 times before.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It's 227. Why did I say three?
Because I wasn't here for the first X number, was I? I wasn't here for Super Excited, which still pops up on my iTunes every now and again, and it really makes me happy. Especially the nervous laugh.
I still have that nervous laugh.
Yeah. so let's crack on with the news, because I think the biggest news of this week is probably our escapades with Yosemite, and we're going to come to that a bit later. So let's save that one up. Let's get over with the big news stories. Sort of a recent one that's just popped into our news feeds now is Larry Page is effectively moving himself above the Google pyramid. So he is shunting Sundar Pichai up into basically he's basically head of Google products, basically anything of any size that Google operate. He seems to now be head of
everything apart from YouTube.
Mm.
He is basically running,
and I guess that's maybe YouTube's, you know, earning enough, and they don't want to rock the boat with it too much. Maybe they've decided that who is in charge of it? I can't remember her name.
It is Susan Wojcicki.
Yeah, so she's been in charge of it for a while now, and she they're clearly doing an all right job. So Larry Page citing the fact that he wants to keep Google on its toes. He wants to, instead of having to just deal with endless reports, he wants to actually take the future direction of the company more. Sounds like a sensible idea to me.
Yeah, and it seems to be what's driving it is he wants to have a more younger and allegedly more nimbler, folk in charge. So keep innovating, you know, stop it. I guess these guys have been in charge, you know, 20 years now, and they're looking to let other folk come in and say, you know, take it in a direction. They obviously trust this guy. I mean, he was in charge of Chrome, and then he got Chrome and Android, and now he's got, as you say, everything apart from YouTube. But it's a big, big, big responsibility.
To be honest, with his announcement, I was just speaking to him the other day, with his announcement, it's almost like I'm bored of these endless meetings and reports. I know. I'll just shunt them over to someone else. But yeah, he's kind of the head of Google's Google I.O. as well. So he's the developer kind of focus, isn't he? He's clearly done a good job, and he's clearly been rewarded for it. Google announced Inbox. I think it was a couple of weeks ago they actually first announced it, but it's kind of starting to roll out now. Google Inbox is Google's answer to Mailbox, right?
Yeah, I think it might have come out. I think it was just on the day we did our last one, and I can't remember how long ago that was. Was that the day after the Apple one?
Mm, I think so.
And Google Inbox was their answer to Mailbox, basically, and also to try and redo Mail.
So it's kind of, it takes your inbox feed and it identifies where you're talking and organizing meetings. It identifies emails that are coming in around flights and travel. It identifies emails that kind of from friends have got, pictures and media associated. And it kind of shows you those things in sort of sections. So it might bundle a load of emails together if they're sort of Amazon purchases or purchases from around the net web. It might bundle your friends and sort of holiday snaps, baby snaps together. It might bundle, I think they said, all the travel arrangements and things like that.
Yeah, together. don't forget all those gate changes.
Endless, every single one's always about flight gate changes. They're really important. But it's also going to extract to-dos. It's going to have reminders. It's going to try and pick context aware out of email contents to try and pick out reminders. And, oh, it's someone's birthday. And, you know, have you done this? Have you done that? So kind of turning your email into the modern day equivalent of a Filofax organizer, isn't it, really?
And if you look at things like Mailbox and some of the other apps that have come out to try and do something for the email, you know, because You see, everybody gets email, and a lot of it turns into, you know, the old getting things done. It comes into an action item, you know. So rather than just leaving it there to remind you to do something, it's like, you know, we'll flag this into your to-do system, or turn it into, I'll deal with it now and I'll do it later. And this is Google's kind of attempt to do similar. Have you managed to try it yet?
No, I did. You know, I got an email the other day about it, I think. In fact, I think that was the email I got maybe just before the previous podcast. And I just don't want to, because email is my business at the moment, basically. So I have no idea whether actually you switch on to the new, you know, the Google inbox, and does it turn off your Gmail, or can you get to both? That's kind of my question that I had initially. So I kind of overlooked it at the time.
So I guess the things to point out, it only works with Gmail. It doesn't work with like the app
Then it won't work. Yeah, it won't work with mine then.
Yeah, and I'm kind of much the same in that my kind of most used email accounts are non-Gmail. You know, they're you know, Google app ones. But I have turned it on for the Gmail one. Mm-hmm. I don't get a lot of, and it's nice, but I don't get the volume that I get elsewhere. You know,
and it's almost, it needs the volume to become
useful.
Useful.
Yeah. But it looked, you know, app worked really nice. So it was the kind of hints of this new material design in it as well. And certainly all the feedback from the folk that get, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails a day say, like, this is, you know, fantastic. It does make some changes to your Gmail account, creates new, they don't call it folders, do they? They call it something else.
They're bundles now.
Bundles, yeah. But it creates retrospective, it creates folders, sorry, if you're going through the Gmail front end on the web. But a lot of people are saying, don't need the web, you know, just do it all through this app. And it's out for iOS and Android.
Mm. You know, there will be a web, or the web app sort of following on, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So call me old fashioned at the moment, you know, because I know what I'm doing at the moment. I don't want to upset the web bandwagon. As much as anything, I would just be worried that, you know, am I still going to see all the emails I need to see? And that'd be my initial worry. But I'm sure actually I will end up moving over to, if they do end up rolling out to apps, which again, I'm sure they will.
It's like the whole RSS feeds. You know, some folk have just said, saw it, don't need it. I can, you know, check Twitter and tech meme, mm-hmm. and that's enough, and I'll get everything I need. And there's other fools like me who are like, nope, I'm still, what if I miss X? And I think I have turned it right down, but certainly for all the kind of blogs that I follow, I still rely on RSS.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Here follows the health section. It seems that everyone's into health at the moment. And so Google Fit has been announced, so the Fit app by Google for Android devices. And they all follow along the kind of same lines as the Health Kit for iOS. So they're kind of designed to be central hubs that developers can hook into, as well as collecting data and information for themselves to put it all into one central location. So the Google Fit app looks nice, looks very Withings-esque in its sort of appearance. I haven't seen or haven't looked into which ones can sort of integrate into it, but the actual app itself will track your activity based on its own internal sensors and location and all those kind of nice jazzy bits.
It looked almost exactly the same as I could see as Apple's health one, including having similar type bugs, you know, because I think the challenge of integrating these things is actually quite a lot. I mean, Apple's been tripping up on things like, initially there were some bugs where it was just not picking up, or it was duplicating, or it was removing entries. But there's been some real low level stuff, you know, like how you measure, you know, sugar levels is different in America to the UK. So, you know, if you are affected by that could be quite serious. You know, if you're trying to,
I don't think if you were truly affected by it, you'd be relying on your Android app.
but the thing is, they were making kind of play for that, and showing that integration, and then have just been, and it's just it's a units thing. You know, it's just the, you know, they use different units to what we do, and Google's had similar issues, so similar bugs and teething trouble.
I think it's fair to also point out that this was announced by Google back at their I/O. So this was way back in June that they announced it. I guess they've seen Apple's announcement and sort of kicked themselves into action to get it out there.
And the difference is they've got a web presence as well. So Apple's is very much, they've got this integration app only on the iPhone. So it doesn't exist on, you know, iPad or anywhere else. Whereas with Google, it's
pulling it all into one central location, that it can be accessed anywhere.
Yes.
Because Microsoft have also come out and they've said that we're doing this too. Hello, we're over here. So they've released their Fit app, and also they've announced a $199 wearable.
Yes, so this is Microsoft Health, which does what we've just talked about from Google and Apple, but they've also actually launched a device which is out in America tomorrow.
And this is very much along the same lines as all the other tracking devices that we've sort of seen from other places. It's a wearable band that then tracks your pedometers, and I think has it got inbuilt anything else, or is it just, I'm reading rapidly down these notes.
This actually does quite a bit, because it's got GPS built in as well.
Okay.
So and it also does, it will notify you of things like calls and mails and texts. So it will do a bit of notification from your phone. And it is a little touchscreen device as well.
So it's kind of that hybrid of wearable kind of, watch / other bits and bobs.
Yep. I guess one of the things that's a big change from Microsoft, we've seen it throughout the year, basically since Ballmer's left, is that it works anywhere. So they want to be like number one for health, and they know that means they must be on Android and iOS because they've got no market share with Windows Phone.
That's different from both, I guess, Google app, Google Health app, or Fit app, Apple's offering, because those two are device centric. I know Google's obviously wider across web and stuff, but it's still, as far as devices go, I don't suppose it's actually going across to Windows Phone.
No.
So that's that then.
And Fitbit, only worrying thing, again, it's just battery life in these things. So they expect it to be 24 hours a day because it will track sleep and everything, and you'll get about 48 hours out of it because of GPS.
And that's kind of one thing that Fitbit's announcements this week for their new range of devices. Most of those are saying they're going to have 7-day battery life, which they've been in this game for a little while now. They're one of the first people to do these smart devices. And their new range looks suitably advanced, actually. They've come in with several different offerings. The top of the range one being effectively a smartwatch with inbuilt LCD screen. So that's going to be a little touch screen. It's got GPS. It's got heart rate. It's got tri-axis accelerometer, gyroscope, compass, ambient light sensor. So loads of things going on in this device. And okay, it's not here yet, but they're still saying 7-day aimed for battery life.
Yeah, so the three devices, just to do it quickly, Fitbit Charge, which is the basically a kind of slightly souped up Force came out this year, but then they found some issues with, I think it was reacting with people's skin. I think there were certain conditions where it would cause a slight reaction, so they had to withdraw it, which was slightly unfortunate. And that's almost just like the kind of basic tracker as a watch. It's got a small OLED display. 7 days, as you said, and it does a bit of caller ID. So when your phone rings, it's in your pocket, you can have a look and see, Chris is calling. I will ignore that one.
Yeah, so you get out your Fit device rather than your actual phone. Yep.
The next one up is the Charge HR, exactly the same, but it also measures your heart rate using technology called Pure Plus, Pure Pulse even. Why would you call it Pure Plus? And as you said, the final one's a Fitbit Surge, much more like a kind of watch. But the interesting thing for me was GPS, so it'll do all the tracking.
But we are up to $250 now. Expect that to be £200 by the time it translates. Yeah, no, I agree. Their range has always been a compelling range and a very consumer focused and nicely slick as well.
Yeah, I've always liked what they've tracked. I've liked the website. I've got a lot of use out of it. I know some people like Shaq hate it, but I've got a lot of use out of it. And
I don't know what there's to hate about it, really. It's just,
he's always went why, and it's like, but why not? You know, for me, it's a way of keeping motivated and keeping the weight off. And if that works for me, then so be it. Yeah. You know, there's other things motivate other people. This again interests me more because of GPS.
Don't need to track it with because that was always Fitbit. You could basically tell how far you'd gone, but you couldn't tell where you'd gone.
And I use RunKeeper on the iPhone for that. The only thing it's missing for me is I get music. I love music when I'm running. I can't run without music. I know a lot of people hate it, but it helps. But I'm what I'm thinking is next year I'll make a choice and that I go that route and just get a small music player, you know, and that's all I need.
But I don't see how. So when you're saying you need music, you can't have a headphone attached to your wrist while you're running.
No, so there's nothing.
You mean as in because you've got Runkeeper, you've got your phone on with you? You mean?
Yeah, I've got my phone strapped to my arm, and there's nothing to stop me using, you know, Bluetooth. My runs aren't that long that I'm going to run out of battery.
No, fine.
So
you could still take. You're still going to take your phone with you and run.
Come on. Not if this. If this has got GPS tracking. So the only thing I'm missing is music. So I would go and just get a cheap small music player.
Fair enough.
And then the only thing I would miss is taking pictures if I see something nice. So I'm back to the, I'll take my phone. I'll take everything.
Take my backpack. Here ends the fitness section. So well done. You've listened through the fitness bit. So if you're into that stuff, that fitness thing, it's a fad. It'll pass. You can.
No, it's the future.
There's plenty of devices. Now you can tell it's Christmas coming up. That's everyone's on everyone's mind. Even though a lot of these devices we've been talking about actually won't be out till 2015. So still a way off yet. EE has announced that 4G Plus is coming to London, or in fact it has been switched on, although it is not turned on for, it's not available to iPhone users because they don't have the right circuitry. This is going to bounce people up to a theoretical 300 megabytes per second, or megabits per second, sorry, although potentially more likely it's 150 to start with, right?
Yeah, and 150, that's what I get at home, broadband.
Yeah, it's mental.
And it's like, that's a nice speed.
I mean, you can go up to your limit in about 1 second now.
Yeah.
Look at this speed. You can't use it.
One of my friends at work just picked up the iPhone 6 Plus. It's massive. B, it's his first 4G phone. And then he did two speed tests. One was sitting in his house on 4G and he got like 35 meg. He then swapped to the home Wi-Fi and he got 2 meg.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And these things make a whole load more things possible, if you like. So even though we can't yet use that kind of data, it was just like just before this podcast, I was having to download a few apps and stuff to get everything set up. And just nowadays, a 30 megabyte download from the internet, it literally takes a few seconds, if that. And it's just a different world we live in. And everyone is saying, why do I need all the speed? Well, that's kind of why. It just makes... No, makes all these cloud and internet things work better.
Yeah, I'd like to see one of the kind of EE's, Vodafone's, the ones that are offering nice, fast, reliable speed to actually say, right, data is the next one. Instead of your 4 gig, we're going to give you 10.
Yeah, I think they have to. Because otherwise one's totally out of whack with the other. I'd rather see them spend more money on upping the bandwidth that they can give.
Yeah, definitely. It makes all the streaming services a lot more appealing.
Yeah. I can't wait for the day where you don't have to worry about data anymore. I mean, it's almost it seems a silly thing. Once an infrastructure's in place, you know, it seems a silly thing that you have to keep paying for because the infrastructure's there. And, you know, it's almost like one of these things that should be a, you know, countrywide thing that you just is available. That's kind of where I think things will have to go eventually.
Well, any political party that said that was a top manifesto and would get my vote, unless they're the Tories, still couldn't do it. And UKIP couldn't do it.
Twitter is trying to refactor themselves. They've announced something called Fabric, which is effectively, you know, turn left at the traffic light type decision. But they're trying to attract developers in app developers. So they are releasing several different products. Something called Twitter Kit, Mopub, Crashlytics, which is all designed around trying to get developers to use their kind of services. Biggest one that they've announced is the ability for developers to log in or get people logging into apps via their mobile phone numbers. Because this is something that, as an individual developer, you can't get the traction to do this, but Twitter have kind of got that traction, and therefore they are now offering the only way that you can log in via your phone number.
This all looked really good. And my only little niggle was just how Twitter screwed over developers a couple of years back.
The problem is, if you offer someone such a compelling thing as, you know, you can get them just signed in via their device and that's it, done, it is a big enough hook to for people not to, you know, don't shut your nose off, sweaty face kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll touch on it later with one of the Apple stories we've got. It's just if you start to really hack off develop, if you lose trust, you know, it's that whole community goes. The stuff they announced looked, you know, excellent. Couldn't you know, fault it. It's just that niggle that, you know, you've done this already. You got all the developers, you'd signed them all up, and then you went, by the way, all this money and time you've invested in developing these apps.
Yeah, and thanks for all the ideas that we're now going to roll into our own app. Yeah. Is them trying to reintroduce themselves? It's trying to work out how do we remain relevant in this marketplace? So they're also opening up their access to their ad platform and things like that, so people can actually have integrate that into their own applications and therefore gain money from it. And let's say Crashlytics is all about analytics, which tries to understand why things have gone wrong with your app or where things are going well.
And they're doing it in the right place. I mean, you said it years ago, it's moving to mobile. All the statistics that come out, you know, if you look at all the adverts are now, you know, making more money on mobile platforms than they are on desktop. It is moving. Even the sales of a lot of the online stores are moving to, you know, buying on your mobile phone.
I have to say, adverts recently have become more and more, for me, they're just becoming all pervasive now. Whereas it used to be the preserve of certain, you know, certain websites or certain, you know, arenas or just for free services that you knew you were getting ads, you now get them everywhere and anywhere and all the time, to the extent that they actually break normal content. So a couple of game sites, if you go to them, you have to watch pre-roll ads on their videos. And quite often that just crashes the whole system, and therefore you can never watch the content you want to watch.
Yeah, there was a video yesterday I wanted to watch, and I was on the iPhone, and it played I'm trying to remember the name of the game, some another one of these, almost like another hack and slash type, you know, game RPG type nonsense. And it played it, and it pops up the Peggy 16, and it played the 30 second thing, and I'm like, oh, come on. And then it finished, and it popped up Peggy 16, and I'm thinking,
yep.
No,
I've had exactly the same thing. Yeah,
that's not a movie trailer. That's the same game trailer. So I refreshed. So for the third time it played, and then it did it again. It's like, right, gone.
Ironically for me, it was the advert with Kevin Bacon on the EE, the buffer face. And I was like, yeah, this is the third time I watched this. This is, I don't know, there's some sort of weird karma going on there. Sidetracked. Let's get on to Facebook. Have built, rebuilt the forums. The forums that we always used to love and get involved in every single aspect of our daily lives. Facebook have decided they're going to build something called Rooms.
Yep, it's out on iOS. You download it, you sign up. It's a bit weird. To join a room, you get a QR code.
Oh, okay.
And then you kind of take a picture of it and you join the room.
It's kind of their, how I see it is that they're trying to make this some sort of one mega forum, right? Turn conversations into a massive kind of, what do they call it? They call it, I can't remember what the social sphere or whatever. And basically each person you can create your own new room. You're free to pick a topic that's good to you, and other people can join that room. You can make it as private or as public as you like. You can control as much of the conversation that goes on inside that room. But I guess it's them just trying to, they'll be able to mine that information. You know, here's a topic and here's what people are talking about.
Well, the one for me was, I mean, instantly I just thought a new Lickers forum, because you can customize the like button and you can tune it to lick.
Exactly.
And I just thought that's comedy gold. I like that. I'll lick it.
So, yeah, and I think they're right that forums now don't play as big a part in our day-to-day life. Whether this can inspire enough interest in it to you know, tip it over, there's something there.
Yeah, and I think you're right that the traditional forum doesn't, but then you look at sites like Reddit.
It's moved. It's not that people don't have opinions. One thing that people on the internet have in abundance is opinions.
Yeah. And I think a lot of these group messaging apps have taken a lot of the traffic away as
Absolutely.
Well. I mean, I guess that's where we're all kind of hanging out and organising stuff.
Sure.
But it actually works quite nicely. It's okay. Actually quite a nice app. So it's just a shame. I think it is only iOS at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's iOS at the moment.
And people just have that mistrust of Facebook, probably quite rightly. So
and it has no ties to Facebook. And
sure, but
no...
other than it's owned by Facebook.
No, but what I meant by that is you don't... I'm counting to 50. Apart from the fact it's owned by Facebook, you don't need a Facebook account to sign in.
No, it's all... So it's independent. And actually, it's kind of a bubble to one side. So, you know, it's been... the chap who's built it was bought in as part of something else, wasn't he? I'm trying to, again, trying to rapidly read notes. But he was brought into... and he's sort of been kept separate from the main Facebook area.
It was a company of branch...
There we go.
That's what they were calling. And they kind of, they did something similar and they brought in, as you said, they were all kept. It's almost like in a little room. And
so they got kind of bought across for some other reason and now they found a reason to exist again. Okay, lovely. Apple has sort of, there's been a couple of weird decisions recently about what they're kind of rejecting from their app stores. This particular story is about a calculator widget that got rejected.
P-Calc. I don't know if you've heard of P-Calc. It might even have been one of my picks at one point, and you probably went, you've picked a calculator app as your pick.
Because that was going through my head again. It must have happened before, yeah. You picked a calculator?
Yeah, you picked a chess app? Yeah, it's two-player. The
Revolution of chess.
P-Calc, the developer is a chap called James Thompson. And he's a fellow Glaswegian, so he's based in Glasgow, and he worked for Apple years ago, but he's been basically behind in P-Calc's existence for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a Mac app when iOS came out, it became an iOS app, and he put a lot of effort into not only developing a widget, but also doing handoff, you know, with P-Calc between P-Calc and the desktop and the iOS app. And
so is this a widget across? You know, is it a you know, desktop widget, or is it a kind of iOS and desktop?
So it's on iOS, and this was the, you know how you can get widgets in the notification bar on your iPhone and iPad now. So what you're doing is basically make a calculator. Okay. And the irony was, Apple have been promoting this as one of the best kind of widget style notification apps that are out there. And he was preparing for a conference this weekend and heard last Friday that he's got a call from Apple about his app, and it was usually a sign of something bad. And he missed the call. But eventually he got news yesterday that Apple won't allow calculators in the widget area. You have to remove your app. Now, this, and I mean, and whether you think that's, you know, do you really need functionality like that in a widget isn't the issue. All along, Apple have said, you know, we want developers to be creative and put things in here and blah, blah, blah. They were promoting this app. The guy spent months doing this. You know, he's a sole developer. This is his income. This is what I hate about the whole, the kind of Apple and the way they just decide arbitrarily sometimes. Right, we no longer think this is suitable. Remove your app.
You know what, though? It's not, you know, it's devil's advocate time. It's actually not that Apple think that. It's the fact that they write things down in guidelines and then they have people follow those guidelines who don't have the authority to vary from them.
No, and in this case, it seems to be that's exactly what happened. So a day later, an Apple spokesman spoke to TechCrunch, and not to James Thompson himself, spoke to TechCrunch and says, look, we looked into this, this will be getting reversed. So it looks like this was on one of the guidelines and somebody's just been following the script. And even though it's been out for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, even though Apple are promoting it, they've said, take it off.
Yeah, because, because they're on, they've got so many apps to review that they do it as an ongoing process rather.
So the good news is that his app will remain. Yeah. And I mean, there was a lot of love around the kind of Apple Twitter community yesterday, you know, for him, because it was just such a stressful time. And, you know, it's just that, you know, the amount of effort that obviously he's put into that and just to see it ripped away. And then there was lots of people, lots of things like, you know, now that it's back up, go and buy it if you've not already bought it, because show them some love.
Okay.
But it's been Apple also removed another one called Launcher, because all that app did was basically a launch. It was like a shortcut to launch other apps, and they went, no, we don't want that in there for whatever reason. But they never had that as part of the original guidelines.
No, so that's something they've decided is now not what they want there. Yeah. You know, it's their ball. They can do what they like with it. Right, so we're now on to Yosemite thoughts. So obviously Yosemite was released as a free download. Ian decided he would go down the fresh install route. And Chris decided he would go down the update or upgrade install route. How did it go for you?
The actual upgrade went really well. It was I'd already upgraded the MacBook Air, and so I'd got the thing on the stick, backed up everything, wiped it, put it on. I was actually quite surprised how quickly I got everything back up and running. I took a few little shortcuts, you know, like copy the Dropbox folder locally. So rather than letting it sync, you just copy it back in, and then it just checks everything, and then lo and behold, it's all there. So there's things you can do to shortcut your kind of upgrade process. The same for iTunes and music and stuff. You can do things just to shortcut all that. Everything's touch a bit of wood. Everything seems to be working fine. Had a bit of fun tonight, and that's probably why I sound a bit different, because there's obviously some settings that I forgot to bring over. So some of my little tweaks that I did to make me, you know, basically make my balls drop, I've now gone. So I now sound like a kind of probably a screechy little Griswegian. And there's a couple other things that I don't like. Like, there is a definite blurriness that didn't exist before.
Let's talk about the actual operating system in a second. Would you like to guess how long it took my computer to upgrade itself?
19 hours.
Longer.
Oh, 29 hours.
Longer. It took 35 hours for my computer from the beginning of the upgrade process to actually get to the end of that upgrade process, which is ridiculous.
Mine's did sit saying 1 second remaining for about half an hour.
Oh, mine set at 2 minutes remaining for 30 of those hours.
Ouch.
Yeah, so you know, I was actually ill off work as it went. But had I had to be at work, it would have caused me incredible
That would have been a nightmare. Yeah.
And it turns out, and as it goes, if you had anything inside of the user local folder, that's what was slowing things down. I don't know why the file copying from that particular folder was slow and not included in the kind of generic. I think they do a generic bulk copy of your documents and things like that. Thing is, VarLocal is used for things like Zen server puts all its files in there, so that's where all the kind of local repositories are. So all my Git repositories and things like that, which are covered in, you know, hundreds of files.
Well, I was going to say, because of the way Git's structured as well, you'll have thousands of files in there,
and I've got lots and lots of installations on my local development. You know, that's my job, that's my work.
Yeah,
but that, yeah. Say it's just as well I was ill at the time, because I wouldn't have been able to work anyway, because I had sat watching a screen waiting for it to try and upload, and you know, all those kind of thoughts go through your head, what to do. And you online, the only advice was just leave it, it'll get there.
That's amazing when you think of the betas it's went through, and also the open beta that something like that,
and surely developers have, you know, Zen server installed, you know, those kind of things. So yes, it was a little bit a heartache. As far as since it's come back to life again, you know, as you say, touch wood, everything seems roughly right, other than my microphone tonight, a bit like yours, didn't pick up properly. So I'm not sure why that is. And we shall have to do a bit more digging on that. But everything else, apps and so forth, have come back to life fine.
Good.
So now let's talk about your blurriness.
I'm not... So the bits I've noticed, so I'm running, I've got a 27-inch iMac and I've got the 27-inch other screen. So there's lots of screen. I don't really notice the blurriness in the air, I've got to be honest. I don't sit there and go, ooh, that's blurry. I've noticed it in a few of the kind of option screens within Yosemite. I notice a bit of blurriness. Everything else seems all right for me.
There's a couple of things that bug me. One is there... You know, they're going about this transparent look, and certain areas of the screen are transparent.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to give you that illusion of, you know, there's depth to this and you can see through it. But the problem is the transparency goes through windows that aren't transparent. So it kind of breaks that illusion immediately. So say you've got a web browser open, and you can still, through the transparent areas of my, say, my Finder window, I can still see the desktop. I don't see the what's underneath the browser. I see the desktop underneath. And that just breaks the illusion entirely of what it's supposed to be doing. So that seemed pointless. The other thing that bugs me is that all the buttons and I think I've said this about iOS, that they all look like they've been done through, a mock-up device.
Yeah.
As in, you know, so how you make website mock-ups.
Yeah.
That's what these buttons look like. I dislike the direction they've gone with these buttons.
And they have definitely, they've flattened it down. And so on iOS, they kind of took all the button shapes away. They just made it like the icon and there was no shape around it. And so there was some confusion about touch areas. And then they brought it. So under accessibility in iOS, you can
looked ugly.
Exactly.
I turned them on and they looked ugly.
It's the same on Yosemite now. So you can go into, I think it's under accessibility in here as well, and you can turn on certain things. I should just go and check rather than
so you can turn on certain shapes around it. But tabs and buttons and things, like, for me, I think the font size has gone down slightly as well. And everything,
that's just old age.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
It was Roy, friend of the show. Roy got in touch yesterday on Twitter, and it was like, help. I've just installed Yosemite and it feels like somebody's dirtied my glasses.
Yeah, and I agree. I'd say everything does look a little bit less crisp, shall we say.
And so we both at the same time kind of stumbled on a website that was giving you some tips to, you know, you can turn off like the transparency and you can turn, because some people are saying also get performance hits from this transparency effect, because obviously it's doing more maths just to show you the same thing. But what Roy found further down the comments, somebody's put a GitHub of download an old font and reinstall this font. And sure enough, he put that on and he was like, my sharpness was back. Mm-hmm. So he certainly found a big difference just from doing that little hack. And it's just unfortunate because I feel things like that are, and so certainly everybody.
But that's the big thing about this release, is its new look and feel.
It's one of the big things. I just think, I mean, they are almost encouraging you, and I'm going to feel sore tomorrow. I'm going into town. Not only am I going to have a fantastic burger, but I'm going to pop into the Apple store and see iMac.
I'm going to pop into the store.
Yeah. Well, me and Shaq will pop in. It'll be like, there's those two saddles again, and it'll be like, look at that Retina iMac, and I bet you my eyes. I'll come home and my eyes will hurt.
Just looking at a true 4K video the other day that I saw, I was blown away by how your eyes, you know, look at that.
And I mean, certainly looking at Shaq's Retina MacBook, I mean, there's a marked difference between that and the Air.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't enough to compel me to upgrade. Yeah. I think what's putting me off even upgrading it, A, I've not got the money, but if I did have the money, see, because it's just like the first gen. I mean, they're talking about that to power this iMac, it's like two DisplayPort adapters inside, because the DisplayPort 1.3 or Thunderbolt 1.3 wasn't supported in time, and it's all a bit hacky.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this before. I've got exactly the same reservations as I want one.
Yeah, this is cutting edge and probably a bit too cutting edge for me. I would like next year's version where it's just, you know, it's the latest and greatest. And
yeah, where they've got rid of those potential teeth. I mean, the thing is, I haven't heard of any teething problems yet. But
no, you know, everybody is saying it's fantastic. So don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm sure it is. I just think, and also this is only 3 years old and I bought it, you know, almost top of the range, and it's fine. I do not need a new machine. Retina is the only difference that I'm looking at it and going, Retina would be nice. No, there's no getting away from it. But then if I upgraded that, I would have to upgrade my other screen. There's no way I could have... So that would be a 5K iMac and a 4K other screen.
But you can't... That would surely push it above... Can it even do that? You know, that's... Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. But and are you then using all your graphics card to just, you know, for desktop? It's just...
Just for transparency effects.
Yeah. I mean, the heat coming off the graphics cards must be enough to heat your
house. Mother little niggle. And I don't like my iMac waking up. See, if I put it to sleep, you will sleep, you bugger. Do not wake. So yes, I turn off things like, yeah, but it wakes up every 2 hours.
For any particular reason?
It wakes up every 2 hours and everything's switched off. It's a known issue. If you go in the forums, there's lots of people struggling with it, and there's people like going disable this thing, and then you go and disable it, it's like, oh, I've lost internet. That didn't work.
So I haven't noticed that, but then again, it could do. I put mine to sleep often and then just, you know, I haven't noticed it ping back to life, but maybe it does.
It doesn't wake and stay awake. It just, it's like doing one of those, it's almost like a little kind of the power nap thing. It's yeah. going on. It's almost like it's checking for things and then off. But I don't want it. I've turned all that off.
Mm. Yeah.
But overall, it's actually, I like getting calls and texts.
Well, I haven't got any of that integration, so that I don't get any of those benefits. I knew I wasn't going to get those benefits. So, and I don't, you know, in my sidebar, I haven't ever used it. So I can now see the markets and whoop-de-doo. There's another thing. It's a bit like gate changing. You know, everyone has market apps, but no one really looks at them.
Oh, okay.
I know you do.
I do.
I know.
And I've got, I like my little weather widget, which is far more detailed than before because it lost that.
I've just allowed it location, so I'm just going to type my...
Do you know what I have? What this... See, by wiping it, has made me do a couple of things. I've ditched Chrome, so I've went all Safari.
Okay. And I haven't even loaded Safari yet, and I've that's another big selling point, right?
And the reason I went Safari was battery on the laptop is criminal. Chrome is just like, give me your battery. It will use everything and more.
Yeah.
And I looked at the widget because I always used to say not a widget, it's extensions. I always just look at extensions and go, I need all these extensions, and I don't get a grip. Yep. The important ones that I need are all supported in Safari as well. There's some things I don't like. I used to love, you know, being able to, what's that thing that you can do, pin tabs. I loved having pin tabs and all that kind of stuff, and I do miss that. But it's small beer. It is small beer.
I always used to find, I do find Safari on, well, up until this upgrade, like I said, I haven't fired it up yet. I always found it was a hog when it first started up. It did a whole load of background tasks, things like upgrading or updating its thumbnails for all its, you know, its multitude of screens that it pinged out. And I always used to find as soon as I loaded it up, I had to wait because my Mac is under memoried basically. Therefore, I had to wait for it to kick in. So
how much memory have you got?
I think I've only got 8. I can't remember.
We'll talk after. I found like 16 gig of RAM in my drawer.
Right. Okay. Well, maybe that would be useful.
Shat, get in touch. If we're having this chat as if we're not podcasting. Hold on, let's finish the podcast.
Right, Amazon have talked. we were, it was about very random. Amazon have released their version of Chromecast called Fire Stick via TV Stick. And it's basically $39 and it does the same kind of things Chromecast, other than it actually has an interface that you can use a controller on, which is actually quite a nice novel thing. If you've ever used the Chromecast, you know that basically you have to have an app that's compatible, and then you, from your phone, Mac or whatever, you can fling it over to the Chromecast.
And the first 2 days, it was $19, only out in America. Lots of people were buying it because Amazon have got that HBO deal in America.
Yes, it means so they can have Game of Thrones on it, basically.
And so it was just like, and there's so much great content that it's just like $19 to watch all that. Sold.
Boom, yeah. So you get your Prime, get your dongle and off you go. PS4 have released their SharePlay. And this is their... basically, it's their service that allows you to set your PS4 up as a game server, and you can serve it to a friend, and they can play your game, they can watch your game, they can even play against you as long as they've got a PlayStation thing, and they don't need to own that game. That's the big point.
And this is like a really big, you know, kind of feature update. This is version 2 of the firmware, and there's a whole lot of sharing stuff in it, as in like YouTube and uploading content and other things. But this SharePlay, I've downloaded it and I've just not had a chance to try it. I was talking to Jasper, and Baum and Kev last night, and Jasper tried it, but his upload isn't very good. I think he says he's only got like a meg.
Oh yeah, so that's not enough.
So when he was trying it was just a pixely mess. Whereas the video I've seen not from Sony, but from just, you know, like randoms like us doing it, it looked awesome, and people were saying it was fantastic. And the only limitation is that. It's done in 720p. You might get a lower frame rate.
My TV only does that anyway.
It only lasts an hour. But once that hour's done, you just start up a new one. You know, so you could easily have a games night playing FIFA, and it's only me that's bought FIFA.
Yeah, but you can only do it. There's one other person, so there's no. It's only two player, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
But if you just the whole concept that you've got a game. That you can trial and we can play against each other, and there's nothing being bought and there's no demos being downloaded and it's just all streaming. It's like that.
I guess the only thing that bugs me about it is that they will be artificially crippling this as far as what the features are available and what you can and can't do with someone else's game based on the fact, some artificial notion of, well, you can go back to what you used to do in your lounge when everyone lived together in, you know, these hippie communes. Where did that come from? But you know what I mean? There's no reason why they have to limit it to an hour. There's no reason for doing that other than because the publishers won't agree to it unless they do.
Absolutely.
There's no reason that they're saying you can only limit this to two players. There's no reason to say you have to
glass,
have
a... I think you're glass half empty rather than glass half full.
Sure, because it's great. It sounds awesome.
Because on Monday you couldn't do this, and Wednesday you could.
And hopefully by next year on Wednesday, you might be able to do more. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is publishers just being nervous about it, really.
Yeah. Well, and also, you can now theme your dashboard.
Those things that they tell us we love to do.
Yeah. We have heard from our consumers. They
mind you, I do
this.
Turn mine yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we've rambled on far too much tonight. So let's put this one to bed. So if you want to find out anything about us, what we do and what we talk about when we're not podcasting, you've found some of that tonight. Digitaloutbox.com, info@digitaloutbox.com is our email address, and we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. If you want to particularly follow me, you can do CheesyUK on Twitter. And if you want to follow me, what I'm doing in my racing and stuff, it's academyracer.co.uk. Ian, where can we find you?
My blog is iand.net, and it always worries me when somebody at work says, you've got a blog. and I'm on Twitter Sweeper.
There we go. Good stuff. We will talk at you next week. So we will talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.
I've gone to about this Mac. It says memory 8 gig, yeah. 1333 DDR3. Send me a parcel.
The only thing is, I think one might be faulty, so I think you really have to do a bit of trial and error.
Yeah, that don't work. Stick it right up, yeah.